This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz.
Brought to you by Jordan's Furniture, Bing Y World Class Market, Brennan Smoke Shop, Rodenheiser Plumbing, Heating, AC and Electric, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Advanced Auto Parts, U.S. Marker Board, Boston Volkswagen, Gravely Zero Turn Lawnmower, Foxwoods Resort Casino, Jackson Lumber, and Mass General Cancer Center.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
All right, welcome into the Baseball Reporters, third program of the season. We're from the Star Market Broadcast Studio tonight at TD Garden. The Bruins and the New York Rangers coming up 7:30. We'll have Bruins pregame at 7 o'clock. Bob Beers, Judd Surratt. I'm assuming they're going to be popping into this studio and doing it from here usually, yeah, right, Mark? Correct. So we'll get to say hello to those guys, but obviously we have a lot to get to. Still on the Red Sox as we head into their season opener tomorrow night in Seattle against the Mariners. And in case you're wondering, it's a 7 o'clock Eastern game, 4 o'clock Seattle time. So even though they're on the West Coast, it's an Eastern, you know, it's an East Coast night game. You'll be able to watch it. A little bit unusual. Oftentimes when teams open on the West Coast, they open at 1 Pacific, which would be a 4 o'clock game here. Typically opening day is a day game. But the Red Sox will be opening at 4 Pacific, which means you'll have a regular day at work, whatever else. Excuse me. And then you can sit down on your sofa and watch a baseball game for the first time, a meaningful baseball game for the first time in 2019. We'll open up the phone lines right away. 617-779-0985 is your number on the program. And we had a short half-hour show last night. We will have another one on Friday. So I want to continue the discussion at least a little bit tonight about Mookie Betts. I said this last night on the program. I'm just going to throw this out there quickly because I do want to get to the Red Sox bullpen. But Mookie Betts, to me now, is in line for somewhere around, call it 10 years and $350 million. Okay, somewhere in that neighborhood. He's going to get less than Mike Trout, but based on the timing of it and his career performance thus far, he is going to command more than Manny Machado, more than Bryce Harper, probably more than Nolan Arenado, who didn't even get to free agency and got $32.5 million a year. Those deals all ranged from 8 years to 13 years in length, and they ranged from $260 to $426.5 million for Trout, okay? So if you just draw a line somewhere in the middle, 10 years, 350, that seems like an easy number, an easy place to start. And my question to you as Red Sox fans, after this year, would you give Mookie Betts that kind of contract? Would you do it? My answer is no. Murray, what's yours?
Mine is yes.
Okay. And so I think that given where the rates are, it's an interesting discussion, and there's a reason I'm a no. And if it comes up here in conversation with the callers tonight, I'll give you the specifics on that. I did it last night. In the interim, the Red Sox bullpen remains the biggest question on this team as it was throughout last year. We worried about the bullpen coming out of camp. We worried about it, certainly, particularly in the second half of the regular season. We worried about it going into the playoffs when Alex Cora played the wild card of using starters in the postseason and was able to get huge key contributions out of Nathan Eovaldi, Chris Sale, Rick Porcello, David Price. They all filled the holes in that bullpen in the eighth or ninth innings oftentimes, gave Alex Cora the type of stability and firepower he needed at the end of the game. And if they can get to October again, and they should, they will almost certainly do the same thing. But that doesn't mean I'm going to sit here and tell you now that I think everything is fine. And so do you remember how much fun last year was, Murray? Last year was fun. Looking at that bullpen, questioning them on a virtual nightly basis because it was really the only hole in a 108-win team that went on to win 119. And in case you've forgotten as a listener, we're going to refresh your memory as to just how much fun we had. Go ahead, Jimmy, play it.
Matt Barnes, Heath Henry, Joe Kelly, and those other guys.
It's time to spin the wheel of Gutless Bums.
Red Sox manager Alex Cora is faced with a tough decision. Who to use in a high leverage situation late in the game? Now, let's spin the wheel! And today's Cutlass Bum is the jackpot of song!
So let me just tell you, the names have changed.
Yeah, the names have definitely changed. And by the way, it'll always blow my mind because that thing was produced on May 18th of 2018. It didn't take long for us to see that they got some real issues in the bullpen. Now, granted, we were wrong, and they all turned it around come playoff time, the most important time of the season. We get it. But let's be honest with each other here. For most of the season, they did suck. It was the Wheel of Gutless Bums.
I'll tell you what, Murray, I am prouder than that than anything we've ever done. And it was it was your work, and I'll tell you why. It is not easy during a during a season in which a team wins 108 regular season games, 108, and then goes 11-3 against in the postseason against the three next best teams in baseball, the Yankees, the Astros, the Dodgers, all of them high payroll teams. The Red Sox went 119-57, and we still ripped them. We found a way, Murray. We found a way, and that bullpen was the way. And so the names will change on the Wheel of Gutless Bums.
Oh, it's coming back.
Oh, no, but the wheel will stay the same. The wheel is staying with the Red Sox bullpen. I can assure you of that. So phone lines are open again, 617-779-0985. Here's the comment that Alex Cora made with regard to his bullpen this year. And I read this the other day, and I think it's worth reading again. We tried to find audio of it. I'm not sure it's out there. But Cora says of his bullpen, stuff-wise, we're good, he said. There are certain guys that obviously they were working on a few things, but like I've been saying all along, we've got guys who have got stuff. Hard throwers, cutters, breaking balls, sinkers. Now it's up to me and the coaching staff to identify the matchups and use them. I'm very comfortable. That one line, now it's up to me and the coaching staff to identify the matchups and use them. I'm very comfortable. You know who has a bullpen that it's up to him and the coaching staff now to identify the matchups? The Yankees. Aaron Boone. When you have guys in that bullpen, whether it's Betances, Britton, Ottavino now, you have a range of relievers in that bullpen that comes down to the manager. Now it's, can Aaron Boone put them in the right place? I read this comment from Alex Cora, and I said, I think Alex Cora is kind of laying himself out there a little bit. He's going to sit there and say, it's up to me to make the most out of this bullpen. And the reality is, it's not up to him at all. Now, look, maybe he's trying to take some of the pressure off these guys. Maybe he's trying to, again, alleviate sort of the uncertainty in that bullpen by putting the pressure on him. But the fact is, that's a cocky, arrogant, borderline insane statement for a guy to make, given the relievers that he has out there.
He doesn't have a real closer, Maz. It's still, as of right now, do we know whether it's going to be Barnes or Brazier? Like, it feels like it's still going to be closer by committee as for the start of the season.
Okay, so I'm glad you brought that up, Murray, the term closer by committee. The Red Sox have tried this before. They tried it in 2003 with Chad Fox and all those other bums that they had in that bullpen then. They blew it on opening day. The whole idea was we'll mix and match. We'll be able to use a modern sabermetric approach to handling that bullpen. And then you know what happened? They had to scrap it by the end of May. Completely scrap it. And over the next several months, they acquired, in no uncertain order, if I remember this right, Alan Embry, Scott Williamson. They went out on the free agent of Byung-Hyun Kim.
Yeah, Brent, yeah.
They went out on the free agent market and then signed Keith Folk. So they then went out there four different times to try to find bullpen help. And ultimately, only when they went for one of the premium guys in the game at the time did they win the World Series. And Folk should have been the MVP of the World Series, was a key guy in that. Now here we are, 15, 16 years later, and they're trying to pull this nonsense again. And now the world, I think, overall is a little more accepting of the whole bullpen idea, committee idea. The key outs can come in the seventh game as easily as the ninth. I think overall the baseball world is more accepting of that. Nonetheless, I'm not sure that it can work the way the Red Sox want it to work. So Sean McAdam, who covers the team and has for a long time, but now works for the Boston Sports Journal, Greg Bedard's website. McAdam was on with Matt McCarthy on the Hardcore Baseball podcast, and they had an exchange about the composition of the bullpen at this time and how Alex Cora is going to have to deal with it. And, well, go ahead, Jimmy Stewart, our producer, if we could play that, please.
Is there hesitation to use the term bullpen by committee or closer by committee?
It's funny. I've had some people in the front office jokingly refer to the fact that that might be a tough sell publicly. They kind of chuckle about it. But I think, you know, there is a bit of understanding that in selling this, if you will, they're going to be careful how they label it.
Okay, so at the end of the day, I don't care how they label it. I'm going purely with the talent and the arms. And so I would tell you, if they want to close with Matt Barnes, which seems to be the way they're going right now, I think it is a disaster waiting to happen. I don't think Matt Barnes can close. I don't think he has the command and the control. And honestly, I'm not sure he has the stomach for it either. Brazier, I think, has the stomach. Brazier throws strikes. The question with Brazier is whether or not he has a pitch that he can rely on against left-handed batters consistently to get them out in tough spots.
But the Stones, he did prove that in the postseason last year. I mean, I mocked him, too, going into this. Like, who the hell is this guy that was in Japan, please? But no, he was, you know, he pitched with some toughness, especially against the Yankees in that first series.
So Brazier intrigues me. Now, I don't know if he can stay healthy.
Sure.
I mean, he missed all his spring training with some sort of a toe infection on his pinky toe, on his right foot. And this is a guy who was 30 years old when he finally got any sort of consistency in terms of appearances and playing time in the big leagues. So I have my doubts. But after that, Colton Brewer, are people really taking the cheese on these guys?
Tyler Thornburg, who got his face ripped off this spring, too, and he's been a disaster since he's been here.
I mean, they all had bad springs, really, the large majority of them. They don't have a power lefty still, which to me was one of the glaring needs. And I think there is a false sense of security with the Red Sox about that bullpen because they were able to work around it last year that people think they can do it again, and I think that's a mistake. Let me take a couple of calls, and then we'll get to some other things here, too. Sam's in Worcester. Go ahead, Sam.
Hey, guys. What's going on? So, obviously, the Red Sox are one of the highest payrolls, if not the highest in baseball. I was looking at some of the free agents that signed this offseason. Names like Cody Allen, who signed for $8 million, Brad Brock for $3 million, and even Boxberger for $2.2 million. Why couldn't the Red Sox go out and maybe get one of those guys, or you know, do something like that?
Okay, so look, Sam, it's a good question. A lot of relievers were cheap. Tony Sipp was another one. Someone emailed in about this left-hander that was with Houston. Sipp went for low money too. And the reason the Red Sox didn't bring them in, I think, might surprise you. We'll tell you what that is when we come back.
We have the Sox covered. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporters. Tony Mazzarotta, show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
So again, one of the standing rules on this program is that anything and everything Red Sox related or baseball related is always welcome, particularly as we move up towards opening day. So if you want to call about something unrelated to the bullpen, unrelated to Mookie Betts, we can do that too. 617-779-0985. Red Sox open the season tomorrow night, which brings me to Josiah in San Antonio. Wants to talk about Dustin Pedroia, who will open the season on the DL. Go ahead, Josiah.
Madison Murray, I just had a couple quick questions. There was mixed reports. They said they expected Pedroia to start 126 games. Then they said he was in the 10-day DL. Then I seen him swing 2-for-3 the other day. So my question is, what's realistic about his return? And then my last point is, why does it seem like the Red Sox have this mentality of, oh, we won the World Series last year, so just ignore all the problems and let's live our lives that way, because I think it could backfire at any moment.
Okay, so I'll tell you what. Let's do the Pedroia thing first, and thanks for the call. There were a little bit of mixed messages there, but I think in a lot of ways you could say that the messages are consistent. So in their minds, they said, we're not expecting Pedroia to play more than 125 games. This is a guy who in the past they would have relied on to play 150. So now they're saying is, no, we're going to back off the workload. The reality is that many of us looked at the 125 and we said, you'll be lucky if you get 25, let alone the 125. So then later in camp came, Pedroia got onto the field, played reasonably well, and the Red Sox said late in camp, we're going to slow down the process. We're going to keep him in Florida in the to start the year, extended spring, and he's going to start the year on the DL, which Pedroia did not like, by the way, and spoke out against. Now, he said he would accept it, not that he has a choice, but the reality is by being as vocal about it as he was, he's not accepting it. He doesn't have a choice, but he wasn't accepting of their idea that he needed more time in the minor leagues or in spring training. Now, this early in the year, probably not a bad idea. They're going out to Seattle, then they'll go to Oakland, and then they'll go to Arizona. So Seattle, I don't expect, would be terribly warm, and neither will Oakland, for that matter, at this time of year. So maybe they want to keep him out of some cooler weather. Maybe they can even keep him out of Boston in April and bring him up later on. I don't know what the logic is there. Pedroia is eventually going to get called in, and then whether or not he lasts, to me, is an absolute long shot. So there's never been anybody that's been able to come back from this sort of microfracture surgery. So Pedroia himself said he wouldn't have done it had he known then what he was going to go through. With the case of Pedroia, to me, I think realistically, you have to expect very little from him. I just don't know that there's a way around that. As for the Red Sox, dancing around and ignoring their problems, most notably in the bullpen, and this was what the caller brought up at the end of the last segment, why didn't they sign some of these more affordable options that were out there for relievers at the in the offseason? I almost said at the deadline. And you know what the truth is? The Red Sox don't have a ton of money to spend. They are close to that luxury, to that higher luxury tax threshold again, which is this year at about $246 million. So when I looked at this early on in spring training, the Red Sox were right around $240 million as it was. So I expect that somewhere along the line here, they are going to try to shave some money or move some money, and that they're only going to make a bullpen move when they absolutely have to. They're going to try to be patient with this whole committee nonsense, but I'll be surprised if it works, because I just think they're short on talent out there. Last year, they had guys with talent. They didn't have a ton of guys who could throw strikes. This year, to me, I'm not sure they have enough of either. Josh is in New Hampshire. Go ahead, Josh.
Hi. So I just want to say that the team is screwing up right now, and I think they should sign Kimbrel. And the only reason is you saw the Yankees do it. You saw everyone else in the division do it, getting bullpen help. They need to do something, or this team is going under this season. I think they'll finish at least third if they don't sign bullpen help, and that's because there's no bullpen.
Other than the Yankees, who's going to finish ahead of them?
I think, honestly, the Orioles and the Blue Jays. Honestly, if you look at the Blue Jays, Marcus Stroman is better than he is, and they have a few young pitchers coming up. And if Vlad Guerrero Jr. comes up, mark my words, I think he's going to actually help turn around that team. And the Red Sox will finish third.
Okay. So
I'd take you seriously if you said Tampa. Tampa won 90 games last year. Their offense wasn't a fluke in the second half of the season. I think that they can be a fly in the ointment type team. I don't expect them to win the East, but they're going to be a pain in the ass, I think, to both Boston and New York this season. But the other two, please.
See, and people think that I'm negative. People think that I'm negative. Of all the asinine things I have ever said, and of all the things I've criticized the Red Sox for, I have never once said this year that they won't make the playoffs. If this team doesn't make the playoffs this year, it's a borderline disaster.
Yeah.
Given the amount of talent they have on that roster.
Worst case scenario, they're the wild card team. Wild card team.
So now I think that is a very real possibility.
Yeah.
Because the Yankees are, the Yankees clearly are a team that's motivated to win. They went out and improved their team during the offseason, whether it be Paxton or in the bullpen. And more importantly, they lost to the Red Sox. And so I do think that the losing sometimes in the long run can be greatly beneficial. It was for this Red Sox team. They brought in a new manager who brought in a whole new attitude. And all of a sudden, the Red Sox had a completely different outlook that, to me, changed who they were. They had really, if you look at it, the greatest season in club history last year. So, and they never lost in the past because of talent. But I'm not going to tell you that they'll finish third. I think it would take a natural disaster to keep this team out of the playoffs. The question is, are they flawed enough that they slide back into second place in the division and then have to play that play-in game and then a division series? And I don't think we should overlook the payroll issue, because it may affect their flexibility to add talent there at the deadline. So 617-779-0985. Again, tonight we're broadcasting from the Star Market studio here at the Garden, and we'll have you up until 7 o'clock this evening. Judd Surratt and Bob Beers will be in here to give you Bruins pregame at 7. I'll take you right into Bruins Rangers at 7:30. But tonight and tomorrow, the last two full hour baseball reporters of the week, will take you right up to first pitch tomorrow. And then on Friday, we do have a short program again, still 6:30, because Celtics pregame will take over at that time, and we'll lead you right into the Celtics game. But we'll continue with your phone calls here in just a moment. I also want to touch on a player in camp that I think a lot of people, incredibly to me, are still taking the cheese on. And this one blows me away, because you'd think by now we all know who and what a player is, particularly when he's been in the league for 5 years, which is really how long this guy's been in there. And yet I still hear people suggesting, it happened last night, that this player on the Red Sox could be a key breakout performer. One guy suggested last night that he'd be more worthy of an investment than Mookie Betts is, which I think is absolutely asinine. But first, Jim Murray will get you caught up on all the latest from today in the world of sports, including some interesting rumors regarding the Patriots and players that they may be interested in. Murray's got your headlines next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is the Baseball Reporters,
which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Maserati, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Seventh batter of the inning. Bradley Jr., a high fly ball to right. Reddick is at the wall, can only watch. A grand slam! Jackie Bradley Jr., a knockout punch here in the eighth.
Jackie Bradley had a good spring. Continuation, really, I guess, of his postseason from last year. He had three hits in the American League Championship Series. They were all big. He ended up winning the MVP award in the series. And this spring, Bradley hit .333 with a .409 on base, .667 slugging. The only Red Sox player who was better in the Grapefruit League was Michael Chavis, the third baseman, or the infielder, who was suspended last season for PED use and actually performed reasonably well in the second half after coming back. So there are people out there now wondering if Jackie Bradley has somehow tapped into some sort of secret, or tapped into some key that will unlock his true potential and elevate him to, you know, borderline superstar status and allow him to produce offensively at any sort of regular level. Murray, are you in that group?
No, please. He had a great postseason last year, and okay, he's had a good spring, but don't fool yourselves. We've seen the bigger sample size. He had a really good postseason. You can put him on a long list of other guys that you didn't really see coming. Craig Counsell, Jeff Supan, guys that were kind of like flash in the pans of the postseason, helped their teams ultimately win a championship. Good for them. But Jackie Bradley Jr. is meh at best.
So this idea that somehow Bradley has changed his swing and all of a sudden turned
into something, please.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? Like, I don't doubt that a guy can get better, but there has to be a baseline of ability there, like Xander Bogaerts. Xander Bogaerts changed his approach at the plate, but to me it didn't have to do with his swing. It had to do with his mentality. Bogaerts is a big guy who swung the bat like a small guy. So the Red Sox finally said to him, start driving the ball. What are you punching singles the other way for? You're a big guy blasted out of the ballpark.
The change in Bogaerts was noticeable in the first month of the season.
But Bogaerts has always had that in him.
Yeah.
I'm not sure Bradley does. Now, look, Bradley, in the final quarter of the season last year,
he's tapped into the fountain of power.
Bradley hit 304 with an 885 OPS in the final 41 games of the regular season last year, which is pretty good. I mean, that's excellent. I have no confidence that he can provide that consistently over any length of time. The idea that that he could do that to me is just asinine. You still waiting on that one? It's only a matter of time before Angelo Mathewin starts calling me, complaining that I'm criticizing Jackie Bradley. It's going to be any day now that I hear from my buddy Angelo. Let's get back to your calls. Max in a truck. Max, what do you got?
Hey, what's up, guys? So I'm really worried about this bullpen. I mean, who's going to be the closer? The setup, man, I don't know. This bullpen looks pretty shaky to me. And, Max, I got a question. I was looking
Matt,
at this.
Before, I'm sorry, Max, before you go on, if I were to ask you of Brazier and Barnes to pick one to start with as your closer, who would you pick?
I would have to go with Brazier.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead. Continue. I was just curious.
Yeah, and is Price working out of the bullpen? Because I do not see him in the starting rotation.
So the Red Sox are not. Yeah, sorry, I just let you go because I thought you splintered off there. The Red Sox announced yesterday that Price is going to be the Game 5 starter, which will be the Monday game in Oakland against the A's. But because I think he only pitched 3 or 4 innings in his final spring outing.
He's been sick, right?
Like, he missed a turn because he was sick. So he's a little behind the other guys. There is a chance that he will pitch out of relief in the first couple of games in Seattle, but that is not going to be a regular thing. Price is a starting pitcher. Pete's in Millville. Go ahead, Pete.
Hey, Matt. Hey, I like your feedback on a couple things. The first thing is I have a wager with my buddy at work with the over-under of Dustin Pedroia starting 35 games this year, and I took the over. And I'd like to know if you think I'm going to win that bet. And the second thing I have is I'm thinking the Sox are trying to save some payroll, with the bullpen disaster they have going on right now in order to sign Mookie Betts next year. I'd like your feedback on those things.
Okay, so I don't think that the salaries in the bullpen are related to Mookie, because you don't have to worry about that until next season. So if you want to tell me you wanted to avoid some sort of long-term deal, I suppose. But the fact is you're going to have guys coming off at the end of the year. Rick Porcello's coming off at the end of the year. That's $20 million. So, and I'm trying to think of who else is potentially. J.D. Martinez is up. I suppose you'd want to keep him. Bogaerts is up at the end of the year. So I'm not sure of all those guys, you know, Porcello, Bogaerts, and J.D. Martinez, I think you could lose two of them. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility.
To be trending that way.
Okay, so because you've already re-signed Sale.
Right.
So of those four, were you going to keep three? My guess is no, you were going to keep two. So I'm not holding my breath there. And Pedroia, honestly, I'd go under 35 games, but, you know, 35 is not a lot. I mean, if you play 20 in the first half, 20 in the second half, you lose. Or maybe you win. I don't remember if you had the over at the end.
Yeah, he had the over. He played 3 last year at that age with that injury. Especially if you're looking at him to play his normal position, you know, the torque you got to put on your knees, like 35. I think right around there is where, you know, that's a good over under. I would say just a hair under, though.
Yeah, I'm not holding my breath on Pedroia. If he gives him something this year, great. And this brings me to Amy and Natick, who has a question about Pedroia. Go ahead, Amy.
Speaking of Pedroia, I'm curious as to how his salary is impacting the Sox payroll issues. When they're trying to make changes and they can't, is he strapping them down? What's your thought on that?
Yeah, so Amy, he is a little bit. I mean, you know, he's not an exorbitant salary. It's $14 million a year, I think it is, 14 and change. And so, you know, that's $14 million that they don't have. And they could certainly go out and get some bullpen help with $14 million. There's no two ways about it. But I would also tell you that there are worse contracts still on their payroll, most notably Pablo Sandoval. So they're still paying Pablo Sandoval $19 million on their payroll. He doesn't come off until the end of the year. Now, Hanley is off, so they don't have to worry about him. And Ruznay Castillo does not count against the luxury tax, but they are paying him over $10 million. In fact, I think the number is even higher than that. I got to look it up on Castillo. Had he been on the 40, he'd be a luxury tax hit of 10 and change, almost 11. But I think the real cash going out to him is closer to 12 or 13. So there is still a hit there that they're taking on Ruznay Castillo in terms of real cash or real cash expenditure, even if it doesn't necessarily affect them in the luxury tax. 617-779-0985. I see a few of you lined up. Don't go anywhere because we'll continue with your calls when we come back.
With Tony Maz, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Jim Murray a little while ago announced the starting lineup for the Red Sox tomorrow in Seattle. I think it's worth repeating. A couple of interesting things in there. I wouldn't say any major surprises. But Benintendi will lead off in left field. Mookie Betts batting second and right. Rafael Devers hitting third to start the year, playing third base. The Red Sox have been sort of indicating this throughout camp that they'd love to get Devers into that three spot. They think that he can handle it. I'll tell you what, based on his first year when he came up, he has the hand-eye and the power to be a middle-of-the-order bat. Now, number three hitter is typically a guy who hits in the 300s. Or pretty darn close, with good plate discipline, et cetera, et cetera. So I think of Devers now as something closer to a five hitter, but we'll see how that goes. In any case, he's going to hit third. J.D. Martinez will bat fourth. He's DHing. Bogart's back in the five hole. They clearly like him behind J.D. Martinez. That worked well for them last year. Mitch Moreland playing first base and batting sixth tomorrow, which is notable because the Mariners are throwing a left-handed starter. Typically, that would have been Steve Pierce and maybe even would have affected the lineup. Pierce might have hit third or fourth or somewhere up there, as the Red Sox often did last year after he joined the team. Your 7-8-9 is Eduardo Nunez, Jackie Bradley, Christian Vasquez with Chris Sale on the mound. I just thought it was worthy to touch on those lineup decisions by Alex Cora going into the opener. We'll squeeze in a couple of more calls here. And I should also tell you, Jim Murray and myself will be at Mr. Sid tonight at Newton Center. They have an annual event there to sort of promote the start of the baseball season. There is a donation being asked at the door for Boston Children's Hospital. If you happen to be in the area, you want to talk a little baseball, have something to eat, there'll be some food to present or what's the word I'm looking for, Money? Murray. The food is provided.
Provided by, yes.
By the Capitol Grill. and we'll have a nice night over there again if you're in the area at Mr. Sid at Newton Center. In the interim, we'll get back to your phone calls here. And Chris in Providence on Mookie Betts. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, Maz. So I think between the four best hitters in baseball right now that have the potential for these decade deals, Mookie's the safest investment. He's small, but he doesn't need his power. He doesn't need to rely on it like Aaron Judge does. He has technique that will last time, much like Ichiro. He doesn't need to stay 230 pounds to be good.
So, Chris, what I would tell you is, was Ichiro a $30 million player?
No.
I mean, if Ichiro played today in his prime, he wouldn't be that kind of guy. And the reason he wouldn't be, because he didn't hit for power. So I look at the durability factor, and you can tell me Mookie Betts might still hit 300 when he's 35 years old because he can run and he's got fast hands. Great. But if he doesn't have the power, he's not worth the money. So this is why I say to you, when you look at all the other guys that signed these enormous contracts, from Arenado to Bryce Harper to Manny Machado to Mike Trout, and those are four, not three, but four. They're all 6'2", 215 pounds or more. Basically, that's what they are. Mookie's 5'9", 180. And I'm sorry, but that is a factor. It's a factor.
I tend to agree with some of that, what he said there, though, although I don't want to compare him to Ichiro, who I do believe is a Hall of Famer, but when he retired last week, I was crapping on because I called him good, not great. But I think the best thing about Mookie's game is, like, good hand-eye, you know? Like, he doesn't really chase all that much. I know he doesn't pull, you know, hit to the opposite field, but the power, I think, is there to an extent. I think he can repeat 30 home runs, but what the caller said, I think that's Mookie's best attribute.
So, Murray, I love Betts. I love Betts. He's got great quickness, got all of that. But to me, the guys that get the big bucks are the guys that can hurt you in any situation. Sure. And I didn't even, if you notice, I didn't even bring up the postseason thing. Although he does have 100 at-bats in the postseason, he's a 220 hitter, which is not good. Dan's in a car. Dan, what do you got?
Tony, I'm going off topic here. In 2014, Cherington made two trades that at the time looked terrible. 5 years later, I think they worked out, and I'd be curious what you think. The first was John Lackey to St. Louis for Alan Craig and Joe Kelly. Alan Craig was a zero, but Joe Kelly made that trade worth it. Yay or nay?
I say no, but go ahead.
The second one, and this one's more controversial, but John Lester to Athletics for Cespedes, who you later did a trade and signed for Porcello. Both those guys, Kelly and Porcello, were big contributors to you winning a World Series last year. Porcello could have helped you 2 years before. Go ahead.
So, Dan, would you have traded John Lester for Rick Porcello?
I wouldn't, but the question is, did it pay off? No one wanted to trade Lester.
So if you want to tell me Cespedes for Porcello ended up being a pretty good move, I'll give you that one. I'll give you that one, given where they ultimately ended up and what Porcello was giving them. And I like Porcello, and at the time they signed him, I thought it was a ridiculous contract. But in this day and age, that's what a starter of his ability gets. And so, I'm okay with you saying that part of it. Cespedes for Porcello, that one doesn't bother me. I like Rick Porcello. I think he's been a good Red Sox. Brendan's in Quincy. Quincy, your last caller tonight. Brendan, make it quick.
Hey, guys, what's up? So Rafael Devers, young kid, showing a lot of potential. Do you think this is the year he steps up and hits 30-plus home runs and brings some power to this middle of the lineup? All right, thanks.
So, Brendan, I hope so. And again, as Murray indicated earlier, we repeated for you a little while ago, Rafael Devers tomorrow in the season opener in Seattle will be batting third in the lineup. Third. Last season overall, Devers hit .240. With a 731 OPS, 21 home runs, 66 RBI. Now, he's 21 years old last year. Again, those are Dominican years, so I would add a 10% tax. But nonetheless, if I look it up here, how old he's going to be now, what's his birthday? 1996, he'll be 23 in October. So he's 22 now, 22 and a half. And again, Dominican years.
Right, put an asterisk on those.
Yeah, so call him 25, okay? He's 25 years old. Now's about the time. And you know what I mean? I thought Devers was something closer to the player he was in 2017 when he hit .284, OPS over .800. And remember, one of the first home runs he hit was in Seattle. Absolute bomb to center field. That was the one to me that I looked at and said, this kid's got real power. You don't hit a ball out of that ballpark the way he hit it out and not have power. Bruins and New York Rangers coming up here in just a little bit. Again, we've been at the TD Garden all day. Judd Surratt, Bob Beers will have Bruins pregame for you here in just a matter of minutes, and they'll take you right into the game. They drop the puck at 7:30. Everyone else, we'll see you tomorrow.
Country.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.